Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Flexin Podcast, episode number 4. And before I actually kick off this episode, I just want to say I'm very, very sorry for the lack of episodes, updates, streams, whatever else I'm supposed to give to you people. I'm very, very sorry. It's been a crazy couple of weeks for me personally. I just moved back to Sri Lanka. I'm back home after spending the entirety of last year in Singapore. And honestly, I've just been spending the last couple of weeks packing, getting things together, and just didn't have time to do anything else. I told myself as soon as I get back, though, I would start streaming again. I'm hoping to stream as soon as this recording is done. And I would also deliver a podcast episode as soon as possible. And that is what you're getting today. So once again, just want to say I'm very sorry for that. This episode's going to be a little long. I think we had a lot more stories, I think, and I just cut out about 10 to 15 different stories that happened over the past few weeks. Not that they weren't important, just more for time's sake, and just because the next couple of stories that I do actually have for today's episode are just crazy. Crazy good stuff is coming up for us over the next couple of months. And without further ado, let's get into it. We're starting off talking about The Wolf Among Us 2, a Telltale series, now officially delayed out of 2023. This year was supposed to be Telltale's big comeback, I guess. They were going to release The Wolf Among Us 2. And I believe The Expanse is also scheduled to, well, I guess it's not scheduled to come out this year anymore. It's probably going to be coming out sometime after The Wolf Among Us. But yeah, this game has now been delayed out of 2023. I think for Telltale especially, this is going to be really important. Company's just gone through a lot of difficult moments over the past couple of years. So this return to form is something that they're working very hard. I'm sure the team there is working very hard to make sure they get it right. They don't want to have any issues. They want the game to be perfect as it can be. And also it's The Wolf Among Us, right? A series which ultimately has a big fan base among the Telltale community, so it only makes sense that they take the time to get it perfect. So what to do? We're going to have to wait and see The Wolf Among Us 2 when it launches sometime next year. Hopefully. Moving on from that one, let's talk about Diablo 4. This month we have two beta tests planned. One is early access, I believe, pre-orders from March 17th to 19th. And we also have a open beta test, which will be from March 24th to March 26th. And to be honest, some initial impressions about Diablo 4 have been very good. I believe something about the requirements, at least the minimum requirements, was revealed. And it's said to basically run on very simple systems. Now, running on a system and actually playing well on a system are two different things. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I assume that the game is going to run really well even on a minimum PC. So hopefully everyone is able to enjoy the experience. The beta test is going to give us a significant look at the game, according to the director, which will include both the prologue and the first act, which is set in the Fractured Peak Zone. Characters are able to level up to 25, and all main and side quests in that area will be available. Also, I believe if you level up to 25, you will get some perks and benefits when the game launches later this year. And for early access players, progress in the beta will transfer between the two beta weekends. So if you do, I initially thought that was meant to read that it'll transfer to the game, but no, it'll actually transfer from weekend to weekend. I pre-ordered the game. I'm probably going to stream it. I don't know if we're allowed to stream the early access. I'm hoping we do, because I'd like to try the game out, see how it goes, because it's been a while since I played some Diablo 3, and Diablo Immortal is an okay experience. So to actually see a full-blown Diablo game again in the modern day is something I'm really looking forward to, and I can't wait for those beta weekends. Hopefully I'll be able to stream during that time as well. Next up, let's talk about a game which I'm very curious about. At the same time, I'm very worried about, because it sounds like everything, essentially. Of course, talking about Pax Day from Mainframe Industries. Now, if the name sounds a little bit familiar, it's because I believe maybe one or two years ago, it was revealed that Sony's working... Xbox is actually working on a cloud-based MMORPG called Pax Day. And Mainframe Industries was going to be the studio that delivered this MMO experience. However, it turns out that Mainframe is going to go solo on this one. Xbox has pulled out of any publishing agreement that they had for the game. But it seems that Mainframe is still being very ambitious when it comes to the game. They're talking about a vast social sandbox experience, MMORPG, where essentially you create the land, if that makes sense. I believe it's just a lot of empty land, and the idea is that players would come and build out the world itself. So you'll have people building villages and towns and castles, and essentially the whole landscape will be shaped out by the players themselves. Which, okay, on the one hand, an experience like that sounds amazing on paper, and in your head you're like, wow, you know, you can actually own the experience and you can really create the world yourself. Obviously, you need to be given the right tools to do such a thing. You can't just be told, like, okay, create the world and just be given a couple of assets just to put in certain areas. I also wonder how they're going to deal with griefing and land space and things like that. To my understanding, even though it's an MMORPG, it's still going to be split into different servers. So it's not going to be like one giant world, kind of like a No Man's Sky where there's just infinite space and people will just be playing on the same server. I think it's more they're going to be doing different instances, and each instance will have enough of a player base to be able to build up this world. Again, it sounds good on paper, and I'm still really, really excited for it, especially to see what are the unique type of aspects that they were going for in this game. Because I remember when this game was first revealed some time ago, they were talking about it being cloud-based to the point where something, if I remember correctly, and believe me, my memory is not the best, I think the idea behind the cloud-based aspect of it was that you can also play the game on your phone, but if you play the game on your phone, it's a different experience. So for example, let's say you're playing it on your PC, right? You do your building, stuff like that, put your land together, maybe put a house together for yourself, you're done. Then you log off your PC, you're done for the day, and you go outside. I know it's hard to imagine going outside, but trust me on this one. So you go outside, you take your phone out, and then you can still log into Pax Day, and maybe you'll be able to check out your inventory, maybe put some crafting materials in to like craft something. You'll be able to do certain aspects of the game on a different screen. You won't be able to play the full game itself, but you'll be able to do those, maybe, I wouldn't call them tedious tasks, but essentially mini tasks that you would be wasting time with in the main game itself. I don't know if this is still a feature, because to my understanding, this game has only been revealed for Steam at the moment. So it's only coming to PC. It's not even coming to any console platform at the time. I believe if Xbox was involved, it would have just come to the Xbox anyway. So it's hard to say. I don't know what the final game is going to look like, and we don't even have a release date for it, but it is something to look forward to sometime later this year. Pax Day. The name is just, I'm sure the name has something to do with the world, but it's not that inspiring. That's all I'm going to say about that. Moving on. The next few topics are actually going to be about fighting games, all of them. And there's one really, really exciting announcement towards the end that I'm really can't wait to share with you. But let's go into this one first. We're talking about EVO. EVO 2023. We've just got about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah, we got the titles for this year's EVO, and they are as follows. We've got Dragon Ball FighterZ, which is making its fourth appearance at EVO. Guilty Gear Strive, making its second appearance. King of Fighters 15 making its second appearance. Melty Blood Type Lumina, second appearance. Mortal Kombat 11 Ultimate, its third appearance. Street Fighter 6, which will be making its first appearance. And if I'm not wrong, it's probably going to be the first time the game is actually played in a competition anywhere at EVO. We got Tekken 7, which will be making, surprise, surprise, its seventh appearance at EVO. Probably for the last time, as Tekken 8 is scheduled to launch later this year. And also, we have Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 making its seventh appearance at EVO. Those are your titles for EVO 2023. And yeah, they look great. Street Fighter 6 is very, very interesting. I believe the game is only coming out a couple of months before EVO. So it's interesting to see whether the Street Fighting community is ready. Did I call it the Street Fighting community? I meant to say Street Fighter. The Street Fighter community is ready to take on that challenge at EVO. It's curious to me, but the other games are pretty par for the parcel. Marvel vs. Capcom is an interesting appearance. I don't know whether the game was available at the last EVO at least. It's definitely been the seventh appearance, right? So it's definitely been there before. But I can't remember Marvel vs. Capcom being there. Smash is not here. I don't know whether there's some dispute there. There probably is. Given Smash and its very unfortunate history with the fighting game community, I'm not surprised that Smash isn't here. But yeah, EVO lineup right there. We've also got a couple of additional announcements coming here, which is instead of a top 8 finals, it's going to be a top 6. Each game will have a set prize pool of $25,000. Each main game, at least. I don't know what the difference between those games and side games are, but I guess each of the ones mentioned will get 25,000. And side games will also be hosting a pre-release tournament for Grand Blue Fantasy versus Rising. I don't know if versus Rising is a new game in the Grand Blue Fantasy fighting series, or whether it's just a remaster of the first one. I'm going to take a guess and say it's a sequel. I'm actually going to look it up. Yeah, I believe it's a sequel. It's a sequel in the Grand Blue Fantasy Versus series. So yeah, there's going to be a pre-release tournament for that at EVO as well. Moving on, let's talk about a kind of unexpected video game announcement. During the earnings call for Warner Brothers Discovery, their CEO announced that Mortal Kombat 12 will be launching sometime in 2023. Again, this was very out of left field because there's no trailer, no major announcement. I don't even think NetherRealm has officially confirmed this game's existence publicly. But again, it was in the earnings call that the full quote goes as, regarding the gaming division at least, there's lots more to come, including the highly anticipated Mortal Kombat 12 and Suicide Squad Kill Justice League. Games also set for release this year with ambitious launch projections. We're going to talk about Suicide Squad later, but yeah, Mortal Kombat 12 is apparently launching later this year. And I can say that we're all looking forward to it. Mortal Kombat 11 was pretty good. I would say maybe it's not the most memorable fighting game of all time, but it was a good game. Can't take that away from it. But now, everyone, you are not ready for this. This was actually announced today, just a couple of hours before I started recording for the podcast. But we are getting an all-new entry in the Dragon Ball Budokai Tenkaichi series. I don't even know where to start with this one. First off, they announced it at the end of the Fighters World Tour final, essentially. It was, I think, as soon as the final game was finished, or maybe before the finals, they showed this trailer with... The trailer looks fantastic, by the way. I recommend giving it a watch, especially if you're a Budokai Tenkaichi fan. But it showed the old game, and then it burst out into this new updated visual version of Goku, and people went absolutely crazy, and understandably so, right? This game came out, I think its last entry is 15 years ago. I believe Budokai Tenkaichi came out, the third game came out 15 years ago. We were in school. I was like very, very young when this game came out. And we were playing it then. Like, we were playing it in school, at friends' houses. Like, people who had a copy of that game loved playing it. It was, and to be fair, for the time, it was one of my favorite fighting games. And I'm really, really excited to see what a new Budokai Tenkaichi is going to look like in 2023. I don't know if it's going to come out this year. It probably might not. It'll most likely be heading to the 2023 mark. 2024 mark. But hey, it's a new entry. I'm not going to complain too much. I'm very, very excited. I know a lot of people have also mentioned that there's probably going to be a lot of season passes for this game. Which, I mean, let's be honest. It's kind of expected at this point. It's not great and it's not fun, especially when you think of this game which came out years ago, which had a lot of characters in it, and how they might stiff us with the characters going forward with a limited launch lineup and then DLC characters released every now and then. So it is possible. But it's still a new Budokai Tenkaichi game. As long as the gameplay is good, I'm open to getting the season passes. You know, it was always a very, very good fighting game. So that's why I say it always deserves its props. It deserves its attention. And it's the reason why it's cultivated such a good fan base. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited to see what this new game's going to look like. We don't have platforms. We don't have release date. We've just got a trailer. We've just got a teaser trailer. And I'm going to be watching that trailer at least once a day until we get some more news for this game. Budokai Tenkaichi 4 expected sometime soon, hopefully. Moving on, we are going to talk about something else which is also kind of exciting to me, but I can't talk too much about it because it's still something which it's in an area which I'm not too familiar with yet. But we could possibly be getting a brand new updated version of Counter-Strike Global Offensive, CSGO, with the Source 2 engine. Now, this is big. This is big news. It was believed at the time that CSGO could never be updated to Source 2. I believe a couple of programmers had come out and said that the way that they built CSGO was made it so difficult to make major changes that they had to really, if they ever wanted to do a Source 2 version of it, they would essentially have to, it would be easier for them to release a brand new game. And that really put quite a few people off, and there were just jokes and memes, and just people completely gave up on the idea of Source 2 in CSGO. And I think Valve at the time probably didn't mind because, again, they were the leaders in the tactical shooter genre. And there was no major competition at the time until 2020 when Valorant came out. You know, I think Valorant really pushed CSGO to make some changes to their system and like bring in some new ideas. And to be honest, up until now, I would say that CSGO has kind of lost that battle. They are very difficult to innovate and make some new changes. Obviously, you shouldn't make too many changes because you're going to lose your core audience. But at the same time, you can't allow your competitors to overtake you and just completely run away with things as well. You should be able to, if you do want to fight back, that is. It's completely up to you at the end of the day what you want to do. So I think Valve actually took it pretty seriously. I think as soon as Valorant came out and started its esports scene and just kept getting updates and improvements, I think Valve just took the CS team and was like, we need to do something. And they might have figured out how to make Source 2 work. They've taken all their effort. The entirety of Valve and just focus them on making CSGO with the Source 2 engine a reality. And it's actually supposed to be coming very soon. Apparently the latest date that we're supposed to expect a beta is April 1st. So it should be coming sometime in March. But we don't have a lot of official news outside of Richard Lewis's article and a few stories from other leakers across Twitter. So it's still up in the air. It's still unconfirmed. Valve, of course, is keeping very silent about it. Understandably so. I think they'd prefer to make a huge banger of an announcement. So, and again, rightly deserved. This is their moment. This is their time to shine. How does this affect Valorant? I honestly don't think it's going to do too much different. For one thing, this is not a new game, as far as we understand. The game is supposed to be nicknamed Counter-Strike 2, but more sources have come out and said, even though that's what it's codenamed, it is essentially CSGO with Source 2. That's most likely what Valve will be releasing. So essentially, it will be the same game, just with major improvements to the servers, to the visuals, to a lot of other different aspects. I don't know what Source 2 improvements entail, especially for a game like CSGO, but it's definitely going to improve the game itself, but at its core, it's still the same game. So it's going to have a lot of people interested and a lot of launch hype, where people, especially people who probably gave up on CSGO in the past, will be coming back to try out the game again. But I don't think Valorant, here's the thing with Valorant, right? Valorant is still improving. It's still adding in more agents, more content, more things for people to do. That even though CSGO with a lot of things to do and a lot of changes, I don't think it's going to be enough to unseat Valorant. If anything, it makes them once again go neck and neck in their competition to be the best tactical shooter on the market. So, hey, I'm excited. I love to see like this type of need for innovation, need for changes in your own brand, especially if you're willing to go out there and do something to make yourself better. By all means, go for it, right? No complaints from me. Hopefully we get some more news about CSGO with Source 2 over the next couple of weeks. And as always, you're going to hear it from me as soon as I get to hear it as well. But moving from CSGO, let's actually talk about Valorant, because we did get some news following lock-in, which we'll also talk about a little bit later. We got the announcement that I've been messing up my words a lot in this podcast. I don't know why. But Valorant's premier mode will be in global beta, coming with episode 6, act 3. Which I don't even know if that's the next act or the act after that. I believe it's the act after the current one. Yeah, okay. So the next act is act 2, which should be launching in a couple of days. And then we'll be getting Act 3, which will be having Premiere in it as well. So if you don't know what Premiere is essentially an in-game tournament system, which will allow people to create teams and compete against other teams in fixed matches. Fixed as in like scheduled matches. Fixed matches sound a lot worse than scheduled matches. So they'll be able to compete in scheduled matches against other teams and win trophies, as well as, I believe, unique cosmetics for their characters as well. But Premiere is also important for the Valorant system as a whole, or the VCT system, because one day the idea is that for VCT challengers, there'll be no more open qualifiers, and the whole idea of qualifying is you play Premiere, and then we'll be able to ascend up to challengers and get to Ascension. And maybe if you're even good enough, one day you'll also make it into the VCT Partnered League. So the idea is that you as a player sitting at home can essentially make that jump to a pro player just by playing the game that you love. And I really love the concept. I really, really love it. I don't know how it's going to work in practice, obviously the idea of open qualifiers being removed might not be so beneficial. I think you'd still want to have that system, but also include premier teams as well, because I don't know how the premier team matchmaking and that system is probably going to be a little bit messy, at least in the first couple of weeks. But at the same time, this is nothing new for Riot. We also have the Clash system in League of Legends, which is kind of similar to this, except it has no connection to the whole League of Legends esports ecosystem. So at least Riot have done this before, and they just bring it over to Valorant. So fingers crossed it goes well. I'm probably not going to have a team or anyone unless I get my act together with Valorant. So this is probably incentive for me to actually start playing more in the next act. And who knows, maybe one day you're going to see Xenoflex on the VCT stage. Very unlikely today, but who's to say over the next couple of months? Right. We're going to talk about some updates from Riot Forge. These updates were from, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I apologize, but I still want to get into them because Riot Forge is one of my favorite Riot Games ideas. So for those of you who don't know what Riot Forge is, it's essentially a publishing label which allows independent developers to work with Riot IP, more specifically with League of Legends at the moment, but I'm hoping one day it includes IPs such as Valorant as well. They're able to use the lore and the universe and the characters created by the team at Riot and create their own games connected in the overarching League of Legends universe. So we got 3 updates regarding games which will be available later this year. The first one is a new announcement for a game called The Mage Seeker, which is the one I'm actually the most excited about, and that'll be launching this spring for console and PC. The reason why I'm excited very personally is because it's being developed by Digital Sun, who are the developers of Moonlighter, which is one of my favorite indie games. And it looks pretty good. I don't remember exactly what the story is about, but and even who the main character is. But I'm very, very keen to play it when it comes out later this spring. We also got a couple of updates for some previously announced titles. That being Convergence, which is focused on the League of Legends champion Echo. And that game will be launching sometime in the summer for all your favorite platforms coming from the developer Double Stallion. So again, that game looks very good. It's a platformer and you get to zip around as Echo and stuff and looks really fun. We also got an update about Song of Nunu, which is a single-player adventure game where you get to play as Nunu, and that game is scheduled to launch this fall. So we have a spring release, a summer release, and a fall release from Riot Forge. And yeah, again, I really like this idea of working with the League of Legends IP to create new games, especially I've just messed up all those words anyway, especially considering the amount of work that Riot has put into creating the world in League of Legends. They've spent a lot of extra time developing the lore, the backstories, the characters within the game. So the fact that all that hard work is also going to be used by other teams to keep expanding on the experience it's fun. It's very, very good news to hear, and I'm looking forward to it. Moving on, let's talk about a couple of events that happened over the past couple of weeks. The first one being Pokemon Day. So Pokemon Day was on, let me get this right, February 27th, and we also got a live stream for Pokemon Presents, where we got a bunch of new updates regarding different games and different TV shows as well. Talk about the first one, which is a expansion pack coming for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. This expansion pack will include 2 DLCs, so it's kind of like the expansion pack that we had for Sword and Shield. The first one being, I believe it's called the Teal Mask, and the second one being the Indigo Disc. and those will be launching sometime later this year. These include new areas, new legendary Pokemon, and we'll also bring back in a bunch of Pokemon not available in the original release of Scarlet and Violet. Then we also finally got an update to Pokemon Sleep, which is a game that Pokemon announced, I believe, in 2019 or 2020, something like a couple of years ago, and the game will be available later this year. The idea behind the game is that I believe you, before you go to bed, you kind of activate the game and say, okay, you're going to sleep now, and then put your phone aside and just sleep. By the time you get up again and open the game, your Pokemon would be well rested and they'll be able to level up, gain points, something like that. The idea is that it'll measure your sleep and ensure you get enough sleep. And the more you sleep and the more you are rested, you'll be able to level up and earn more with your Pokemon. It's kind of weird. I know the concept sounds a little bit weird, but then again, we've also got Pokemon Smile, so, you know, do with that what you will, essentially. We got a couple of updates to the mobile game, so we got new trainers in Pokemon Masters, some new Pokemon dishes in Cafe Remix. I'm not going to talk too much about those, but we've got an update for Pokemon Unite as well, where Zacian, the legendary Pokemon from Pokemon Sword, is now available in the game, and yep, he's the latest addition to Unite. I haven't got a chance to play as Zacian yet, but I know there's an event going on right now where you can try to unlock him, her, it. You can unlock Zacian for free. So if you're a Unite fan, now's a good time to start playing the game again. There were also a couple of interesting announcements. I think these ones stood out to me the most compared to some of the other updates, and that was, first off, a new Netflix series called Pokemon Concierge, which will focus on a story about a girl who's working at a hotel for Pokemon as the concierge, and it sounds really good. It sounds really interesting. It's also an animated show. When they first announced it, I know that it's being developed in Japan, but I still had a feeling they were going to make it a live action for some reason. And then when I saw it stop motion animation, I was like, okay, this is good. And I can't wait to see it when it comes out. It seems like a new concept and an idea for the Pokemon series outside of the regular TV show. So, yeah, sounds fun. And finally, I just realized we also had another update regarding Pokemon Worlds, which will be happening in Yokohama this year. We got a look at the key art, which looks very, very beautiful. I recommend going checking it out because it looks nice. But that aside, we also got the announcement about a new product in the Pokemon trading card series, which is Pokemon TCG Classic. It's a pretty premium idea where they've essentially created like a hardboard box for you to play with all your favorite classic Pokemon cards. I believe it comes with a lot of classic Pokemon cards for you to use, all based on Generation 1 originals, where you can just play with those cards. It looks very, very fancy, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be very, very expensive as well. But I kept thinking, like, yes, I have spent quite a lot of money over the past couple of months on TCG, but I'm going to make an exception for this one because it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. It looks very stylish and polished, and I think it's going to be worth it, even if it costs $1,000. Now that I've said it, I've already committed myself to buying something, so there you go. And that was pretty much it for Pokemon Presents. A lot of announcements. I think people were slightly disappointed because we didn't get an announcement for any Game Boy and Game Boy Advance titles for Nintendo Switch Online. We also surprisingly didn't get an announcement for Mystery Dungeon, which was interesting because there were a lot of rumors and leaks going around saying that we will be getting a Mystery Dungeon game for the Switch, but that was not included at this Pokemon Presents announcement, which tells me that probably it's going to be coming up in a Nintendo Direct sometime later this year, or it could even mean that this Mystery Dungeon game is not planning to launch this year. If it's leaning more to January 2024, it makes sense to then only announce it sometime in September rather than during Pokemon Day. There you go. Next up, let's talk about Sony's State of Play. So we did get a State of Play last month. I didn't actually watch it, so these are going to be all new announcements for me as well. I do know we did see some footage from Suicide Squad, and I believe Street Fighter 6 was also available there. So let me see. We got a trailer for The Foglands, which looks like a VR game, and it's also on Oculus as well. Green Hell VR. I know Green Hell is a survival game, so I believe it has a VR version as well. Or it used to have a VR version, and now it's being updated for PSVR 2. A lot of these look like VR announcements. We've got one for a game called Synapses, which is, looks like a shooting game. Journey to Foundation, which is a book, if I'm not wrong. And now it is a VR game. Before Your Eyes, another VR game. Then we got a trailer for Destiny 2 Lightfall, the expansion. I don't want to talk too much about the Lightfall expansion because even though it's getting shredded by critics, I haven't played it personally. I actually just installed it yesterday because I wasn't able to download and play while I was moving back. So not going to pass any judgment on Lightfall until I've actually sat down and put some time into it, hopefully on stream sometime later this week. We got PS Plus games coming out for March. That's Battlefield 2042, Minecraft Dungeons, and Code Vein. A game called Humanity, which is an action puzzler. I actually thought that was going to be a metaverse game for some reason, but it's there too. We got an announcement for a game called Goodbye Volcano High, which looks like a visual novel. It is a visual novel. There's a new announcement for a Naruto game, which is Naruto Boruto Ultimate Ninja Storm Connections, part of the Ultimate Ninja Storm series. So we're getting a new entry in that series as well. But to my understanding, Connections is pretty much the same story or the same game as all the previous other Ultimate Ninja Storms. It's more that this one would be a more final collection of the games and all their levels as opposed to the previous collection that we had. We got a trailer for Baldur's Gate 3, which will be launching on August 31st, and it's also a console exclusive on PlayStation. We got a trailer for Wayfinder, which I'm actually excited for. That was the online action RPG from Airship Syndicate, who created Darksiders Genesis and Ruined King, the League of Legends story. And it also sounds very, very cool because it's going to be a multiplayer MMORPG game, at least that's what it, sorry, an online action RPG game. Can't get that one wrong. Season 1 of Early Access will be starting for that game in May on PS4 and PS5. Okay, so I have something new to play on my PS5 in May. That's very cool. I probably need to buy this game, is what it sounds like. Doesn't matter, I will find a way. Got a new trailer for Street Fighter 6. Yeah, that's coming. I'm probably gonna stay away from the Street Fighter 6 coverage just because the game is coming out, and sometimes I want to go into these things with a bit of a fresh eye. I don't want to watch too many trailers. It's better for me to not have too much of a vision, just go into the game and then decide whether I like it or not. But so far, Street Fighter 6 looks very, very good from what I've seen. Last two, we've got a new trailer for Resident Evil 4. Don't like the Resident Evil games, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. They're scary, that's all I can give you. And finally, we got a look at Suicide Squad. Now, I didn't watch this trailer, but to me, I've heard very, very mixed opinions about this. Publicly, people have said this game is terrible. I think it also has to do with the fact that this is supposed to be a live service game with season passes and battle passes. Actually, you know what? I think I'm right. There's a season pass and a battle pass and a lot of DLC and live service events and stuff like that. And I think people are getting very bad flashbacks of Marvel Avengers when they hear all this. But I also think internally people who have actually played the game and who at least get a preview of the game or know more about the game have said actually the game itself is still very good. So I guess, again, we'll have to wait until May when the game launches to see whether it's actually a good game. But right now, it sounds like a bit of a mixed bag. Personally, I'll be getting it. I don't mind giving these games a try. Usually, they're not the next coming of GTA 5, but they still have their charms and their excitement about them. So it's still something, to me, that I feel will be worth it. Yeah, let's see what happens. Let's talk about esports now. We spend a lot of time on gaming. At least I believe we spend a lot of time on gaming. And we have a couple of new esports stories to talk about. So let's go. First one being, big announcement in the League of Legends Wild Rift Philippines community is that Tier 1 Entertainment, the owners and the founders of Blacklist International, will be partnering with G2 from Europe to create G2 Blacklist, which will be their Wild Rift roster to complete in the WRL series. This was a pretty big announcement. This is like very rare partnership between a European esports team and a team in Southeast Asia. And on paper, sounds like a very, very good partnership, especially with how prolific Blacklist have been in the Philippines and in the mobile gaming space as a whole. And G2 coming into this space is just all the more exciting. Unfortunately, the team itself hasn't done very well. They got knocked out of the Philippines qualifier for season 1 of WRL. And they also got knocked out recently of the LCQ. So they won't be taking part in season 1, but they'll be regrouping and getting ready to qualify again for season 2, hopefully, when that comes about. Speaking of European teams which are getting involved in mobile esports, we also got the announcement that Team Secret will be taking part in Mobile Legends. They have officially announced their roster in MPL Malaysia, which is very interesting to me. I wouldn't have picked Malaysia as the country that Team Secret would be going into. I guess the Philippines is a bit too competitive in terms of the space. It's also a franchise league, which probably makes it difficult for a team like Team Secret, unless they were taking over an original space, to be involved in. And Malaysia has a huge fan base and player base for Mobile Legends, and it's also a little bit easier for them to get into. So I guess MPL Malaysia probably makes sense. They've got a mixed team of Malaysians, Filipinos, and I believe there's a Singaporean player as well in their MPL squad. And I believe as well their first match is this Friday against RSG. So I'm only rooting for one team. But I hope Team Secret does very well. Again, Team Secret and G2, these are big moves from them to come into the mobile game, the mobile esports space. And I really hope it goes well for them. It'll hopefully encourage more teams to get involved in this space. It's a very, very growing market. Sure, they're probably going to come and try and secure all the best talent in Southeast Asia, who have always historically performed well in Mobile Legends, in Wild Rift, also in games like PUBG Mobile and Free Fire as well. But them coming to this region and help develop the scene is also a very, very big thing. We do have our homegrown teams, but we also need a little bit of help to get us to that next level. So I'm all for it, and I hope these two work it out well to inspire the teams too. More Mobile Legends news. We're going to be talking about MSC, the Mid-Season Cup, which is also known as the Southeast Asia Cup, it was announced that this year's MSC will include three non-Southeast Asian regions, which is MENA, North America, and Turkey, will be taking part in MSC 2023. Interesting to note, though, the tournament is still called the Southeast Asia Cup, which I don't know why they don't just call it the Mid-Season Cup or the Mid-Season Championship or something like that, but they've decided to keep the name and run with it. If it works for them, why not? RSG Philippines was last year's champion, and fingers crossed they're able to do it again this year. My RSG fan, I just saw like a picture of them like with the trophy, and I remember watching that game and them winning the final and being really happy about it. So hopefully RSG Slate Philippines will be able to do it again when MSC 2023 rolls around. Up next, let's talk about lock-in. Boy, what a lock-in it's been. I don't want to talk too much about my pick-ems. You know what? Let me see if I got them right, because I don't have pick-ems for the finals, unfortunately. I forgot to actually do the pick-em for that round, but it was Loud DRX and Navi versus Fnatic. I think I would have probably put Fnatic and Loud through anyway, and Fnatic ended up winning. I know it doesn't make too much sense me saying it after the fact, but that's what I would have done. It turns out I got 155 points. Let me see what I got wrong. I think that's a good place to start. So Detonation Gaming, Detonation Focus Me, and Giants Gaming. I picked Detonation, Giants won. PaperX Cloud9, yeah, I got that one wrong. Cloud9 won. Of course, Cloud9 ended up losing to DRX, so take with that what you will. Team Heretics and Evil Geniuses, I'm actually very, very surprised, and I'm 100% on Team Potter at this point. I think she did a fantastic job getting EG ready for prime time, and I now really hope that they do well in the Americas League, because they looked like a really good team. Very unfortunate to lose out to Talon, but Talon also is a very, very good team coming from the Pacific. They made it all the way to the semis. I'm not surprised at all. They're a very, very strong team, and they're one of the ones to be feared the most coming into the Pacific League. Probably going to be talking about more about the Pacific League going forward as opposed to the other leagues, just because it's closer for me, easier to watch, easier to talk about. Let's go to the Omega bracket. I think I got quite a few of these wrong. Okay. So Liquid versus Secret. Team Secret did an absolute madness beating Team Liquid. I'm very, very impressed. I wouldn't have believed. I don't think anyone had on their cards Team Secret beating Liquid. But it ended up happening, and it was wonderful to see. Very, very happy for those boys. Unfortunately, they did end up losing to Outer Navi. Not a huge surprise there, but it is what it is. Leviathan and Zeta. Did pick Zeta to win. That kind of was a bit of a flip of the coin for me, but you know what? Leviathan also deserve it. They're also looking like a very, very good team. Zeta is also good, just not better than Leviathan. So, unfortunate. T1 and Furia. I actually picked T1 to go through, and I can't think of why. I know I did this pick'em while I recorded that last episode, but the fact that I put T1 through is still a surprise to me. T1 as a whole has been a very, very surprising experience. I don't know what's going on with that team. I feel like they have the tools and kits to actually be a formidable fighting team, but for some reason it's not quite working out for them. And I don't know what's going to change. Whether they'll even be able to be a force to reckon with in Pacific is very, very hard to say. So unfortunately, they're out as well. But I just noticed, aside from those incorrect answers in the round of 16, I actually got everything else right. And again, Paper X is probably the only one I got wrong moving forward from in the quarterfinal and semifinal. So yeah, congratulations to Fnatic. An absolute mad performance from them. Boaster especially pulled off an absolute walloping of Loud. And congratulations to them, and all the best to them as they go back to their take part in their leagues for the first time. I hope all those teams do very, very well. But there was one very sad story that came out sometime during lock-in from Cloud9. And it is that Cloud9 and Ye will be parting ways. Ye is now an unrestricted free agent at Cloud9. And they released a video talking about this decision to move Ye on, saying that, you know, he's a great player, he's professional. However, it just doesn't work out and they want to move him. I think it's too early to call this one, to be honest. I think Ye is still one of the best players in the game. Very easily. No question about it. But I think it's just, he and Cloud9 were probably on two different levels. I think Ye is one level above everyone else at Cloud9. Again, not that they're a bad team. It's just that Ye is on another level. But at the same time, I can't imagine where he could go next. Because on the one hand, you would think NRG is probably the easiest and safest bet to put him in. But I think they also have kind of built out, or they're building their own identity. And I don't know whether you'd want to add Ye into an already formed system. So I think it's Ye is becoming a little bit of a risk, because sure, there are teams which need to improve. You know what? I'm just going to say it. I think if it's even possible, you'd have to probably release a player or two. Not or two, but you'd probably have to release a player. But I think if they could, Sentinels would probably take Ye. I think Sentinels would try very, very hard to get Ye. The only problem is, does he fit in the system? And who would they have to part with to get Ye involved? But I think Sentinels would be a team who would try very, very hard to get Ye. I think he's the type of star power and technical skill that they need for them to improve as a team. Because, again, they did end up losing to Fnatic, who ended up winning the whole tournament. But at the same time, they didn't exactly inspire confidence for them going into the Americas season, just based on all their previous performances. So who knows where Ye is going to go yet next. I'm just going to go out and say it's probably going to be Sentinels, but there's going to have to be a lot of transfers and changes going forward. If Ye doesn't make it to season one of the Americas, I'm going to be very surprised. I know he's a bit of a risk, but at the same time, I feel like he out of all the players there, deserves to be a part of that league. Okay, we've talked about a lot of stuff today. I've just been going on and on and on. But surprisingly, I managed to keep it to 53 minutes. I don't know how, and this is ending up looking like one of the more shorter episodes, even though I've been gone for a couple of weeks. But we're going to move on to our final story now. This one is, it's a mixed bag for me. But I want everyone who's listening to keep an open mind on this one. So we're going to talk about the Olympics esports series, which has been a massive, massive, massive point of contention regarding anything that's been happening regarding Olympics and gaming over the past few months. So sometime last year, the Olympics announced that they'll be holding their first ever Olympic esports week in Singapore from the 22nd to the 25th of June. At the time, there wasn't any announcement of what the games would be, but people were speculating, oh, they'll include all the major esports, and it would be, you know, the first recognition by the Olympic community of esports existence as a as a sport. But on March 1st, the Olympics revealed what will be the sports and the titles that will be used in this series. And here are the games and sports. So we have archery, baseball, chess, cycling, dance, motorsport, sailing, taekwondo, and tennis. So for archery, we have a game called Tic-Tac-Bow. For baseball, we have WBSC's eBaseball. For chess, we have chess.com. Cycling is Zwift. Dance is Just Dance. Motorsport is Gran Turismo 7. Sailing is Virtual Regatta. Taekwondo is Virtual Taekwondo. And tennis is Tennis Clash. So, as you can tell from my from the titles, none of those, with the exception of, I would say, Gran Turismo, are essentially very exciting esport titles. None of them are actually major esport titles at all, right? A couple of them are actually like mobile games, and not even like your PUBG Mobile or your Mobile Legends. It's just mobile games which include sports in. Now, as soon as this announcement came, there was a lot of anger and frustration from the esports community as a whole. A lot of people have pointed out that Tennis Clash is a pay-to-win game. Essentially, it's a game where you can put in, I believe, a total calculation was something like $8,000 to level up your character to the maximum and be the best player within that game itself. Tic-Tac-Bow is also another game which I believe is a mobile game. I don't know too much about that one. Virtual Regatta and Virtual Taekwondo are also games I don't know. But the other ones, I understand why they were picked. Just Zwift is a game. Is it a game? I don't think so. It's a virtual cycling software which I know they were promoting a lot in Singapore. Especially the esports and gaming communities there was trying to encourage more people to get involved with that, along with the Cycling Association. We're trying to get more people to play that game. Chess.com is also a very good pick for the chess title. eBaseball is a game that I played recently. I think it's quite a good baseball game. I don't know how much it shows on a virtual sport level, but it is a very good baseball game. Just Dance, it's an alright pick, I guess. I don't know whether it's the it's the best dance title out. I guess it would be the best dance title out there. But the point I'm trying to make here about this one, about all this, is this. A lot of people might not remember the initial announcement when Singapore was picked to be the host for the games. I remember it because I was in Singapore at the time and I was like, wow, they're going to have a esports event. But if you actually read the announcement back then, they were very insistent. Some would argue maybe not insistent enough, but I was able to read this very clearly. So, not saying it's better, just I was able to see that they clearly said, even though the event is called Esports Week, they would be highlighting virtual sports. As soon as I saw the term virtual sports, I immediately knew this would be the way that they would be going about this entire thing. I didn't think they'd be picking mobile games, to be honest. And even eBaseball to me is a bit of a surprise as a title. But I'm not surprised by a lot of the others. I think the whole idea for this event was never to promote Valorant, League of Legends, Dota, anything like that. The idea was to promote sports games or sporting games. One could argue, why isn't there NBA, FIFA? And I think those are also very good points. I don't have a good answer for that one, but I would imagine that they weren't unable to get those federations involved in being a part of this event, because I believe there's also some consideration to getting the National Sports Federation for that sport involved, because you can see alongside the game pick, there's also the game federation who will be monitoring all activities regarding that game. So I think it's fair to be angry and concerned, especially because this was billed as an esports event. But it's also not a major surprise to me, because the Olympics have always said, with their involvement with esports and gaming as a whole, they've always said that any game that would be a part of the Olympics has to be one which conformed with Olympic standards or Olympic views, or I can't remember what the exact term is, but something to do with the way that they view the world. So, and unfortunately, games which have killing in it, I think even some fantasy elements, just don't fly on in the Olympic radar. And to be honest, after the past few months, does it even really matter if our major games aren't at the Olympics? I feel like we've gotten by so far. We've done pretty well without them so far. We can put on better events and do more things as a community and an organizer that we don't really need the Olympics to help boost any eyeballs to us. Because a lot of these other sports, personal opinion, don't get that exposure. I can't imagine a lot of people get excited to see, I'm going to be honest, even things like taekwondo, archery. I can't think of any other Olympic sports, but those sports actually need the Olympics to gain some traction and attention. And the Olympics is very good to promote that. But I don't think it's the same for esports. I think we get a lot of attention already. I think we are able to always do it better than they would. And that is something that we should always remember when these sports federations are trying to get involved in esports. We as a community will always be able to do it better. Let them do their thing. Let them try to get involved. Let's educate them as much as we can. But let's not be angry when they're still trying to figure things out themselves. And let's just see what happens over the next few weeks. That being said, Tennis Clash is a bad pick because it's a play-to-win game. And we don't like that. I also think Tic-Tac-Boe is another horrendous pick from the Archery Federation. Those two, I think, should really be looked at. I think, personally, it's better if the Tennis Federation just had Nintendo Switch Sports, because that's an actual active game. And Archery can go back to having... I'm trying to remember if there's a game with Archery in it. I'm sure there is one. I'm sure you can find a better Archery game than Tic-Tac-Boe. Anyway... That's been another successful episode of the Flexin Podcast done. Thank you so much for listening. I once again want to apologize for the lack of uploads over the last couple of weeks. It's not going to happen going forward. I'm going to bring a new structure, a new schedule, and make sure we do it right for the next few months. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a good one. Take care.